Call the meeting to order at 6:04. A little piece of housekeeping. If anyone has any electronic devices, we would appreciate it if you would turn them off during the meeting. I'll have a moment of silence, please. Stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Charlie Hawkins.
Here.
Dennis Olison.
Here.
Bonnie Onion.
Here.
Harry Robinson.
Here.
Mary Lou Stewart.
Yes.
Paul Greeno.
Here.
Steve Lawrenson asked to be excused tonight.
I have a motion for Steve's absence, please.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion is carried 6-0. Next item on our agenda is recognition and awards, and we would like to have Mr. Mike Hill please come forward. Mike, I've got some remarks I'm going to make, but first of all, let me start off by saying they're long overdue. And that's all my own personal feeling about it. So let me put my glasses on here and say, Mike Hill grew up in Blaine. His father, Dolph Hill, owned several businesses, including the Pastime Tavern, which was in the family for over 50 years until it was recently sold. Mike has owned Hill's Chevron Station for the last 23 years. When he bought the station in 1992, there were 17 gas stations in Blaine. He has seen a lot of changes over the years from his station, where he has kept a pulse on downtown. Mike's uncle, Jerry Blades, who served and volunteered at the Blaine Food Bank and has been a mentor and an inspiration to him. Mike has a can-do, get-things-done philosophy. Rather than waiting for something to happen, he believes in taking action. He says it's amazing how much can be done in a short time if you just set out to do it. Mike currently serves on the Blaine Economic Development Committee. He has been very active in pursuing Starbucks and Woods Coffee to locate in Blaine. He has also developed a good relationship with Ken Imus and often spends time with Ken, encouraging him in his development of Blaine. Mike spends a lot of volunteer hours on his riding lawnmower, regularly mowing several areas in Blaine, including the strip of grass along Peace Portal Trail. He mows around downtown just because he would like to see the town look clean and maintained. He hopes by doing so he is setting an example to encourage others to take pride in their properties and businesses. Mike and a crew recently cleaned up the overgrown landscaping at the old Paso del Norte building on D Street, which has been a blight in Blaine for many years. He says, imagine what we could tackle if we had 50 volunteers with weed eaters. Mike provides an upscale ambience for his customers at Hill's Chevron with beautiful hanging flower baskets and jazz music, which also drifts into the surrounding areas, adding to the downtown scene near his station. He allows the restrooms at Hill's Chevron to serve as public restrooms downtown. He also created a tradition during holiday harbor lights by providing free hot mini donuts and cider at his station during the tree lighting. Thank you, Mike, for all of your contribution to Blaine as a business owner, as well as taking the initiative and the action to improve and clean up Blaine. Your efforts are building a better Blaine for now and for the future. And the Blaine City Council appreciates all of your work. You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Okay, the next item on our agenda is audience participation. Anyone is welcome to come forward and address the council. If you have an issue or item that you wish to speak about, has anyone signed up this evening? We have one person. Is it Gail Evans? Gail, if you would be kind enough to state your name and address for the record, please.
Yes. I think you know me by now, but yes. I'm Gail Evans. I live at 353 Clark Street in Blaine. I am here just to make some brief comments about the activities of the Friends of the Blaine Library, just to update you a little bit because I know you're all so keenly interested in what we're up to. November is a really busy month for us. We have a book sale. We have a pie contest and a pie sale. We're getting ready for a concert next spring by the jazz pianist Bob Milne. That's a very important fundraising activity we're going to have. And the Friends Library Improvement Committee, which is the new name for the group, which is working with some of you people to advance the project of improving the library, is now called FLIC, F-L-I-C. Friends Library Improvement Committee. We have some advocacy goals for this coming year, which have been restated and modified. I'm afraid I only have two pages, but maybe I'll give them to two of you and you can pass them sideways. And finally, I think I may have mentioned that we have launched a Facebook page, but the big news is right now there is a website that is in the incubation stages. It should be ready to be posted or published within the next month, certainly by Thanksgiving. And that will be a place where we can let everybody know about what's going on with the Friends and all the fundraising activities that we are involved with, including this Bob Milne concert, but many other things coming up in the next few months. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Questions for Gail?
Thank everybody for their work on this and keeping with it.
I'll tell them.
Stay with
we
them.
Meet on Wednesday night, so I'll tell them. Dennis will remember to tell them, too. Great. Thank you, Gail.
Now, is there anyone else that would like to address the council at this time? Yes, sir, if you can come forward. That's fine. You can you'd be kind enough to state your name and address for the record, please.
My name is David Riffle, R-I-F-F-L-E, 5790 Skagit Place over in Birch Bay, Blaine. Something has come to mind over the last few years living here in Blaine, and if you notice up here, it says U.S. Coast Guard retired, and also you'll see a poppy, which you don't see a lot around here anymore.
Nope.
What I've missed on the 11th, the day after tomorrow, in Blaine at 11 o'clock, is a lot of participation from the local people, including maybe the mayor. You may have been there, but I didn't know you at the time. But so you may have slipped my mind. But nobody's participating. Nobody shows up. Have anybody ever been in the military and wants to come and participate on the 11th?
I usually am there.
You're there? Thank you very much.
I enjoy it.
Anybody else? You're there too?
I don't think they've ever asked the city to participate or the mayor.
Well, every place that I've been all over the world, the mayor is always there in ceremony on that type of an occasion.
Yeah.
And it's just never seemed to happen here. The VFW shows up and the American Legion shows up and they do their thing. But with only about 15 or 20 people hanging around, to me, it's an insult to me as a serviceman, retired serviceman, that people don't come out. And I just wanted to bring it to your attention. Maybe you can show up, or maybe you can't show up. I don't know what your schedules are. But if you talk to people and ask them to come down, it would be appreciated to see people there.
Okay.
It's very important to everybody. Should be.
Appreciate it. Okay?
Thank you very much.
Thank you for bringing it to our attention. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to address the council? If not, let's go on to written communications.
Well, we haven't received any.
No written communications. Next item on the agenda, then, is our consent agenda. And we have approval of bills in the amount of $282,274.20. Approval of payroll in the amount of $498,546.89. Approval of the council minutes for October the 26th, 2015. I would be willing to entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Are there any questions concerning the consent agenda or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Motion is carried 6-0. Next item on our agenda is a public hearing. And this is a continuation of our 2016 property tax levy.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make a little bit of a change to the agenda. There's several people here, I think, interested in the council action item number one, which I think maybe it would be okay to address that first.
Sure.
I can come back to this.
Okay, well, delay the public hearing till after the council action items. First council action item is Park and Cemetery Board recommendation for the Bruce Wolf Memorial.
And just really briefly to clarify there, you'll want to not do the next council action item because the public hearing is for it. So just to point of clarification there.
Okay, we'll go back immediately after this.
I think so, yeah.
Thank you.
So this is a recommendation from the Park and Cemetery Board, and it is related to recognizing Bruce Wolf, a very large contributor to our community who sadly passed away not long ago. There was a committee formed. Primarily it was driven by Mr. Mike Myers, and they reviewed different options. One of the proposal that came forward from them was recommending renaming G Street Plaza to Wolf Plaza, and that recommendation was forwarded to the Park and Cemetery Board. The Park and Cemetery Board has a difficult responsibility in this regard, and the city's laws are actually set up with some specifications to even delay actions like this for a period of time. No, they can consider a memorial or honorarium kind of action, renaming, no sooner than 6 months after someone's passing. So that time has gone by, and the Park and Cemetery Board received the recommendation. And the Park and Cemetery Board, again, as I said, are in a very sensitive situation here. They recognize Mr. Wolf as a great contributor to the community. He had a large involvement in the Pacific Arts Association in a number of things related to that, creating the vigil statue. He was a driving force in creating the vigil statue. And nonetheless, the Park and Cemetery Board found that their recommendation was not to rename the plaza in honor of Mr. Wolf, because in their deliberations they discussed that there were so many notable contributors to Blaine today and in the recent past and no doubt in the future. And instead, they recommend honoring Mr. Wolf with a plaque to be placed in H Street Plaza, which is where there are a number of other plaques related to the vigil and large contributors, and also to put on their agenda for future action to rename H Street Plaza to something like Blaine Citizens Memorial Plaza or something. They really haven't fleshed out the name. There's something in your council action item, but the name isn't as important as the idea of recognizing it as significant citizens and naming it in that way, and then using that place to honor those citizens with plaques or other memorials. And so the Park and Cemetery Board's recommendation was to essentially deny renaming G Street Plaza to Bruce Wolf or to Wolf Plaza, but instead recognizing Mr. Wolf with something in H Street Plaza and working towards a kind of more global recognition on that plaza and naming it as such.
And so the staff has recommended that the Park and Cemetery recommendation, let me rephrase that. Staff concurs with the Park and Cemetery Board recommendation and proposes that the City Council make a motion to approve the installation of a plaque in the H Street Plaza as recommended by the Park and Cemetery Board to honor and commemorate Mr. Bruce Wolf for his exemplary commitment and outstanding contribution to the City of Blaine. Anyone wish to?
So moved, Harry.
Questions for Mike or? Okay, we have a motion on the table. Anyone care to second it?
Second.
Okay, the motion has been made and second. Are there any questions or comments?
The only comment is, Mike, down the road, that wall, those plaques would be able to be moved if they had.
And that's actually an excellent point. And one of the things that is mentioned in here is that the wall doesn't actually belong to the city. The wall is on Mel Hollinger's building or his family's building, his trusts. Mel's another notable and honorable Blaine citizen. And so that placing a plaque on that wall will be something that will have to be coordinated with the property owner, and I think that the city needs to begin to look at a more long-term kind of solution, because redevelopment of that building is probably a reality at some time in the future. One of the things that we've discussed with Public Works, we've also brought it up with the Pacific Arts Association, is the idea of creating a seating wall, something like is in front of Edeline's, just a low wall about 3 feet high that has a cap on it, and the bricks that are in the sidewalk, which has some settling problems that Public Works is working on addressing, could be installed on that wall, and then that could also maybe be a place where memorial plaques are installed. But something long-term needs to be addressed with that, and that would be something the Park and Cemetery Board would sort of flesh out. But you're right, the wall is something we need to even receive permission to mount something on, and ultimately, it's a very old building. It's a very old wall.
Mm-hmm. So the intent is for it to be strictly memorial, because that wasn't the case up till now. Some of those people were living when those were put up.
Well, they were, and that's. I don't think there's a full intent developed at this point. The plaza might be named in that way if council approves of it. And then the plaques that are up there now are for major contributors to the vigil.
And they are gone now, I think, all of them.
Yeah, and so it would be something that would evolve, right. I think, a bit. The biggest thing that the Park and Cemetery Board struggled with was the idea that there are a limited number of public facilities and there are a lot of really good people.
Right, for sure. Yep. This is great.
Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Motion is carried 6-0. Okay, I am going to revert back to the public hearing. And the first item on the public hearing is a 2016 property tax levy. That's continued from our last meeting. Anyone wishing to speak on this issue will be allowed 3 minutes. An additional 2 minutes of non-repetitive testimony will be allowed after all testimonies have been heard. Action may be taken at the end of the public hearing. So are you going to introduce the subject, Mr. City Manager?
I'm going to try to fill in for Mr. Lazenby, who's out tonight ill. So he's talked to you about this a little bit before. At the last meeting, he presented the information that the city has an obligation of about $30,000 for the repayment of a utility or a property tax rebate to the aluminum plant. So since then, we've been learning more about what that might look like, and I've got a handout for you that I'm going to give you. I've got extra copies for her. So the front piece of paper is kind of the mathematical summary. The back piece, second page, is the narrative. So let's go to that back page for just a minute because it expresses what the front page is about. We'll go back to that. So if you recall, the city had the 2% banked from previous 2 years with 1% more this year, which before we knew about the situation, the council would have had a chance to consider as a normal part of your budgeting business. Once we learned about this situation, then we began to explore what the thing was about. Each one of those banked dollars represents about $10,000, more or less. So, somebody's just going to read this for the public's benefit as well. Any property tax refunds are already embedded in the city's total levy amount. The auditor has already calculated that. The total levy amount includes the levy, any new construction, and any refunds. It's all in the levy. So it's not as if they're going to come back and charge us for that. Because the refund is already included in the city's total levy, increasing the levy amount by the banked capacity of 2% would cause the amount to exceed the city's highest lawful levy. Therefore, the banked capacity is reduced to zero due to the refund amount. So the county automatically used the 2%. That's what they did. Recommended now is that the City Council take the 1% increase in order to avoid losing banked capacity due to refunds in future years. So if you go to the front page, you can see that there's a previous year's levy, the amount of the refund, 31,536.12, previous levy amount, what the 1% increase is over the previous amount, what the shortfall looks like, and what the actual increase is relative to that year's levy. And then it says, any amounts levy requested greater than the amounts indicated above will reduce the bank capacity. So that's why they went to zero with it. Now the next thing is to do is make a decision about the 1% so that you can fulfill the remainder of the requirement. If you don't do the 1%, the amount's still due. This is a way to pay for it.
And that amount would come out of the general fund?
The amount would it would come out of the general fund as and be paid for by the 1%. That's correct.
But if we didn't do the 1%, we'd just take $20,000 out of the general fund.
Yes, you have the budget for it. You have the budget for it anyway. This has a method to pay for it. The other methods, we have to find the 20.
Yeah. Okay.
$20,985.42.
Okay, now we're going to ask the public to, if they have any comments.
Absolutely, I'll step aside for that.
Item? Anyone wish to speak to the issue? We're being requested, or being recommended, that we take the 1% increase in order to avoid losing our banked capacity due to refunds in future years. And I don't know if anybody wishes to discuss that issue or have questions regarding it that they wish to ask.
So we do not suggest that you approve that tonight. This is to be part of the budget package to be concluded at. So if you leave the public hearing open, there may be other comments later on. It's a little bit sophisticated and, you know, difficult to kind of grasp the first point. It took me a while to figure out what the county was doing. Yeah.
Well, yes and no. Isn't it kind of asking all the property owners that didn't get request refunds to pay for the refunds that were given?
So it's not property owners so much as the recipients of the tax. So the school district, the city, fire district may have had a similar problem. I don't know what their number is. But every public entity that receives a tax benefit relative to our jurisdiction, has to pay back or pay up that shortfall.
Well, we've already received it, so I'm not sure I'm going to vote for the 1% even myself. I'm going to have to give that some more
thought. That's the debate the council will need to have.
Okay. I don't think we have anyone in the audience that wishes to address this issue. Are you recommending that we keep the public hearing open for another
Yes.
meeting? Mm-hmm. Okay. Carry the council have any objections to doing that? Okay. Sherry, do we have to do anything to notify anybody that the public hearing is going to be continued open?
It will be in the paper just as a notice because we originally noticed the public hearing. Could I please request that all council members lean into their mics and speak? I can barely hear anything. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I think on that one, the public hearing will remain open. The next item is a public hearing for the 2016 budget. Again, Mr. City Manager, you're going to bring that forward.
I'm going to hand out Jeff's speaking notes for tonight.
Okay.
Actually, you've already heard this already. He presented all the same information at the last meeting, and I'll hand this out. Could you help me? Six. And give the other ones to the clerk. While Raven's handing that out, we'll talk a little bit about the budget process. To kind of get everybody on the same page. I think the clerk probably contacted the council for a special meeting next Monday, a week from tonight. And the purpose of that Monday meeting is to allow us a little bit more time to talk about the budget and present the general fund. We reversed this a little bit. Typically, we would have had the general fund tonight, and we would have had the utilities later on in the meeting, but we wanted to give the staff a little bit more time to prepare the information. In the past, the budget has, we've talked about this a little bit, the budget hasn't been directly connected to the strategic plan. And so the plan was done out here on its own orbit, budget's done out here. And so when I came, I started looking at that, trying to understand more about it, and decided we really need to merge them. So early on, you had a couple of presentations by Jane Weston as well as ourselves talking about the strategic plan. You directed us to go back and do some work on it. We've done the work. And now we've asked the city council or the city staff to merge their budgets with those plans and those priorities. So at our next meeting, we're going to do a presentation to you, briefly revisit it all so we're all on the same page. And then each budget then is going to be presented relative to those plans. This is a fairly high-level piece of work because we haven't had a lot of time to drill down into it, but I'm not sure if that's really a problem or not. The work we have to do is so routine in respects that there's not a lot of resources to do a lot of new things, so we wind up really just making sure we do the priority kinds of things. So what will come out of this is a recognition of the strategic plan, I think a pretty clear idea of what the department's priorities are in terms of how they achieve that. Then there's going to be some strategies and requests for expenditures. One of those, of course, has been we really want to move forward and aggressively work on the citywide cleanup. So we've got a budget for that. We've got a system for that. There's going to be some requests for some use of red funds, economic redevelopment money, as well as general fund. And then you're going to be looking at ways to look at the future in terms of like the library, for example, and some other projects and programs that you might be interested in pursuing. So that will be laid out all next week in Monday night's meeting. Then the following Monday night is a regular meeting, and at that meeting we start to get back on the regular schedule to have the budget approved, I think the first meeting in December. So that's kind of the overarching strategy and plan. At some point, and hopefully next week, as you work through this, the council can obviously take a close look at what it is that your priorities are. Excuse me. And we're certainly wanting our priorities as staff to match the council's priority. So that's going to be, we want to make sure we have that discussion about that work plan. So that's my presentation for tonight on behalf of Jeff Lazenby.
So are we going to ask, anyone in the audience wish to speak, in terms of the city's approach to the 2016 budget? Hearing none. Mr. City Manager, shall we keep the 2016 budget public hearing open?
Yes.
Okay. So we will keep that open, and we will do the proper notification.
We'll continue that to November
23rd. Okay. Thank you.
Let's go on to the next item on the budget, the council action items. One we've dealt with. Number two is an ordinance 15-2871 property tax levy.
So staff recommends that they defer this until the next meeting as well, next regular council meeting, November 23rd. Is this okay. The first reading?
This could be.
Okay. Is there an action that needs to be taken relative to that?
No, if the council just wants to defer it until the next meeting, they can make
it. Okay. Would anyone like to care to make a motion to carry for this forward to the next council meeting?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Any questions or comments regarding that? Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Therefore, property tax ordinance 15-2871 will be put on the agenda for next meeting. Next item on our agenda is a resolution 1677-15 authorizing HRA VEBA plan.
All right. HRA VEBA stands for Health Retirement Account. VEBA is an acronym for a voluntary employment benefit plan that allows for a set-aside of funds. The state of Washington is very unique in that it allows employees and public employees with the groups of five or more to participate in a VEBA account. VEBA accounts are funded in many, many ways depending upon the group and their decisions to do that. So, for example, employees in some groups have taken their COLAs and decided to defer that into an HRA VEBA account. Some city or counties or hospitals, whoever that may be as a public entity, have used deferred comp, they've used pay raises, they've used all kinds of ways to fund the VEBA. And the reason why they would want to fund VEBA, it's a very specific deferred account that does not tax salary dollars going in, and it doesn't tax it coming out for medical-related expenses. So if you have a $10,000 in the account when you retire, for example, and typically it's a retirement, but it doesn't have to be. That group can decide to use it as an in-and-out program all the time. It doesn't terminate at the end of a period. It rolls over into perpetuity. So you, for example, a person might want to use it to make copays with. They can use it to buy prescription medicine. They can use it to pay for a doctor's appointment. They can use it for a prosthetic. I mean, there's all kinds of medical reasons that you could use it for, and as long as it's a legitimate medical reason, as defined under the program, it's eligible for that. The trick is it has to be approved by resolution by the governing body. It has to have a minimum of five employees in a collective group. And those five employees have to agree on that particular and specific use. So it can be a very broad range of uses, but it can only be one specific relative to that group. So the group that we're talking about here in the city of Blaine is the department managers. So you might recall early this spring and summer, we went through a collective bargaining process, and the department directors were part of a collective bargaining. There was a conversation. Our attorney talked with their attorney. There was a a desire on those employees' parts to move from collective bargaining to at-will contracts. We went through a negotiation with the union for that contract. We went through a process with the employees themselves, went through a process with the city council. We crafted collective bargaining. I guess that's not the right word. We crafted individual employment contracts for all those employees. And in return for giving up collective bargaining rights, there was a list of things that we agreed to. Just for the audience recognition, in the state of Washington, public employees have property rights if they belong to collective bargaining. A property right, just like your home or your car, your bank account, can only be removed or taken under certain circumstances. So if an employee is a public employee under collective bargaining and they have that property right, they're generally have the benefit of due process, all of those kinds of things, unless some performance is so egregious that you can terminate them. So that performance has to be pretty egregious. There's a list of things, stealing. There's a lot of things that you think someone would get terminated for don't, because they have due process and they're represented by collective bargaining. So that's a very, very important property right to have. And so in the negotiation to eliminate that property right for the benefit of practically me, but also the city council, if you have a rogue department head, you want to be able to make a quick decision about it. The contract allows that to happen. On the other hand, the contract allows some benefits for that risk, and that includes a 6-month severance package. It includes some administrative time. It also includes at separation or at retirement that a portion of sick leave balance can be diverted through a deferred program to the HRA VEBA. So for the most part, it takes a long, long time to be here to collect enough hours to hit with the cap on that, and the cap is $12,500. For the most part, I'll never get close to that. I just don't be here that long. It takes a lot of hours, a lot of time. We have just a couple of employees, actually, who've been here that long. Sherry's one of those people that's been here a long time, has been a very conservative user of her sick leave, and will probably be able to achieve that. So tonight is the remainder of the work that the council needs to do to fulfill the requirements of those contracts, which is to approve the resolution. That allows that next mechanism to roll into place to create that HR VEBA fund. After that's done, then the group itself has to get together and have a meeting of the minds about it and then contact the representatives from the VEBA. Every year after that, that group will have to make a decision if that's what they still want to use it for. It could be next year they decide, well, we'd like to use it for some other purpose. We want to use it for paying this year's medical benefit, insurance costs, for example. That group could make that decision. I don't think the council needs to worry about that, because once you pass the resolution, that allows that decision to be made. Some organizations, the state of Washington, I think they make a decision every couple of years. I think they have many, many more employees and a whole different system than what we have. So I don't expect this to change once the decisions are made, but who knows what the future holds. Yes, sir.
This is only for 5 people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, will that be open to the other groups?
We've suggested that they think about it. It's not obligated. They're not required to. I think it's a very it's a great program. All of us are going to need medical care. We all have medical costs. A lot of people pay their medical costs through after-tax dollars. Just after they've had their income, they go and buy a prescription, whatever that may be. So we have a 125 account, which many employers do. 125 allows you to set aside, I think, up to $1,500 or $2,500 here. And that's deducted from your income at the end of your fiscal year, which is December 31st. Whatever remains in that account, you lose. It just goes off the table. There's no way to recover it. This HRA VEBA program goes into perpetuity. It can roll over year after year after year. So if an employee comes and they're relatively young in their career, and they stay here for their career at the end of their period, they could have a nice amount, at least up to a cap. Right now, I think we have a program that employees and we have different collective bargaining groups. There's, I think, about 1,500 hours total in one group, or so, and 10% of that, for example, is something that they're considering for a deferred comp, they could use that for this. But, yeah, we can only suggest it. They have to do what they want.
And it's only sick leave that
yes.
gets...
Yes.
Yes, Bonnie.
So, just to clarify, so the amount up to $12,000, whatever it may be, does it or does it not have to be used for health-related purposes?
It has to be used. It can only go in the HRA VBA, and it can only be used for health-related costs.
Okay.
But it's tax-exempt.
Yes,
yes.
Tax-exempt going in and tax-exempt coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Further questions or comments? Okay. Does anyone care to make a motion?
I move that we adopt this.
Second.
Okay. Motion has been made and seconded to adopt Resolution 1677-15. And is there any other further questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Next item on our agenda is commission, committee, and board reports. First item is Blaine Economic Development Advisory Committee. Mr. City Manager.
Council, I'll just give you a brief report. The committee continues to meet. I think they're doing a good service. Some of the council members serve on that committee as well. We worked last meeting to come up with a list of recommendations to the council for budgeting. You'll see that come up next week. I think the focus of the group now is to try to, you know, kind of dial in on what it can accomplish. There's been, I think from my perspective as the leader of the group, and it's really my responsibility, I think, to try to really focus the group on trying to make some accomplishments, and that we've had a very broad spectrum of areas to work on and be involved in, and I think we need to focus it in. So those recommendations will help us do that. It's been a very active group. They want to meet twice a month, and it's amazing. They show up and have a good debate. So I think it's becoming a very cohesive group, people getting to know each other and debate and talk to each other about things. So I'm excited for 2016.
Thank you. Okay, Bonnie, on the Blaine Chamber of Commerce.
I don't have a report.
WTA Board, Paul.
The November Executive Committee will meet this Thursday, 8 a.m. at the WTA headquarters. All are welcome.
Charlie, anything on the Drayton Harbor Shellfish Advisory Committee?
Not this week.
Dennis, how about your two committees?
The Library Committee meets third Wednesday. Okay. And on Tuesday, Dave and Raven and Jeff met with Dana and Lori Cognac. She's a board member from the Senior Center. And there was a tour, basically, of looking at the facility, both interior and exterior, and a discussion about responsibilities for taking care of the building. And in general, the city is looking at the outside, and the interior will probably be a combination of things. And there's a lot of things that need to be done. And I don't, Raven, did you meet with them at all today?
We did with the contractor.
Yeah. Dave and I met with the owner of Colacurcio and talked about restoration of the back area where the parking lot is. Mm-hmm. And one of the volunteers came out and kind of gave us some background of what was there before, because it's kind of hard to tell. And we're going to be getting a couple of price options from the contractor. We're going to probably create a little bit more grass area than there was before and grade it out so that the seniors can access the lawn. I guess in the past they've had to literally kind of go around like a ramp because of the steep grade. So hopefully improve upon that and see what options we have. And the parking lot was in bad shape before, and now it's the portions that they've affected is worse. So we'll see what options we have to restore.
The other thing was they did have the spaghetti feed, which was very successful. And then on Saturday, the 21st, they've got a pancake breakfast again. And in December 4th and 5th, they have the annual homemade arts and crafts Christmas. So they got a lot of things going.
Okay. Planning Commission, Mr. Jones.
The primary thing on the Planning Commission is just to note that this is the time of year where our schedule always gets a little adjusted because Planning Commission's regular meeting night is also Thanksgiving every year. So we have a meeting this Thursday and next Thursday. So that's the replacement meeting is next Thursday. And then Planning Commission meetings, as often seems to happen as well, happens on Christmas Eve. And we tend to have difficulty getting quorum at 7 p.m. on Christmas Eve. So we expect that meeting may not occur. One other thing to note for the Planning Commission is it didn't make it on this list, but we know now that on November 19th, which is a week from Thursday, we'll be hearing a comprehensive plan amendment for the Seagrass project, which was something you docketed back in August, and that would be to allow changes from 68 units to 62 units, which would primarily convert it from a whole bunch of fourplexes to mostly duplexes. And so that will be... next Thursday.
Say 62 units?
It was originally approved at 68, and it shows up in the Resort Semiahmoo Master Plan, which was just updated recently for 68, and it would go to 62. So it would be a reduction of 6 units. It's really pretty nominal. It's a pretty minor thing. But we spent so much effort trying to get the Resort Master Plan updated for the SPIT to current conditions and what was planned by the property owners, and since they're proposing to make that change, we've told them to come for a comp plan amendment. Of course, like I said, they requested that you docket that, and we're going to hear that on next Thursday. I assume it's pretty straightforward. And nothing for the Planning Commission, or excuse me, nothing for the Park and Cemetery Board.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Ravens, anything on the Public Works Advisory Committee?
Changing my devices here. So we had a meeting last Thursday, and we talked a bit about the city's strategic plan and actually some of the documents that I prepared in terms of contributing to that and kind of where that might fit in. One of the things that came up was kind of a unanimous concern by the committee that emergency response be included in the strategic plan, not so much emergency services, but what will we do with each utility as an example in the case of a catastrophe or whatnot, and how does that all fit into the overall strategic plan. We talked a little bit about some sewer code changes that we're hoping to bring to you before the end of the year, and I guess the only other thing that I can report is similar to what Mr. Milbrecht was saying about the Economic Development Committee, and we're seeing similar, more debate, more interesting conversation. The committee has kind of risen over the hump of learning and now actually contributing and giving some good input, so we're very pleased. Next meeting is December 3rd at 10 a.m. publicly.
And Raven, did the committee give their buy-in or approval or whatever you want to call it with running the sewer through Lincoln Park? I mean, there was no vote, nothing like that, but I think the committee seemed to be in agreement that for economic development purposes, that was a good idea for the city to pursue that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think anyone would disagree with that.
Yeah.
I think that they were suggesting that that developer on the east side put in a big enough pipe to start with.
There's quite a bit of diverse conversation about what the developer on the east side should do, and I'll probably leave it at that. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. Small Cities Caucus. David, I think we have a meeting next month.
This will be
third.
Can I ask a question about that?
From the Small Cities Caucus?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
There came out in a paper, or on an email I got, that the mayors had were supporting specific charter amendments. And I guess my question is how do they get into that role? And is that then because we basically appoint the mayor, who then goes to these meetings with Dave, that somehow represents what our thinking is? And I would like to have that as a connection, if you don't mind. And I try to find out, you know, when do they meet, where do they meet, and there's, as far as I can tell, there's nothing on the Internet about it. And maybe somebody can explain to me how it got to be a group that was able to make these recommendations using basically their office to propose certain items. And as far as I'm concerned, I think it's wrong.
I'm not sure I know what Dennis is referring to. So I think the origin of the group came from a proposal by the Port in Bellingham, who supports the committee. So Dodd Snodgrass is the one that usually sends out a meeting notice to all the small cities' mayors. I've been notified because I'm the city manager. Mayor's notified because he's the mayor. It's usually held on the third Tuesday of the month in Linden at 8:30. Once a month.
Is that in a public building?
It's in a public mm-hmm. building.
See, yeah. That's where I have a problem, because if it's in a public building, then how can it not be an open meeting?
Well, there are meetings that are part of that are in city facilities that are not public meetings. I meet with my staff and I meet with council members.
No, but that's not coming out in a statement then in the press that this is what we support, and it has to do with the ballot measures and whatever.
So let me get there. And then you guys can talk about this. So there's an agenda that comes out. Sometimes the agenda is produced from the previous meeting carryover items. I think sometimes I think the mayor of Sumas is the chair of the meeting now. And I think it rotates every year or 2 years. Sometimes I think people will send him information about what they might want to talk about. But there's not really a formal call for agenda items. So it's really very informal in that regard. So generally for us, for me in particular, I'll get to the meeting on Tuesday morning. And other than maybe seeing the agenda come out on a meeting notice the day before, I don't know what's on the agenda necessarily. So we get to the meeting, and because it's not a posted meeting, there's no requirement for an agenda. So things can come up in the meeting, just like this is coming up, as a result of some ideas and concerns. It's on our agenda because you could have brought it up anyway. But and I think what happens is the group then will kind of work through issues and questions. Sometimes, and particularly in the case of the charter amendments, I think the mayor from Linden took the initiative on that. I think he's the one that drafted that letter, or his staff did. So then what happens is it goes out to the other mayors about their endorsement. So now the question is, from your point, if something's being endorsed by the mayor, is that an endorsement by the city council? And I think we've gotten the feedback from the city attorney is that any council member can use their title as council member to endorse any particular thing that they want. There are some requirements that if they endorse it, they have to say they're the mayor or they're the city council member. The fact is, the practical is that no one enforces that. It's just not, for all practical reasons, the state agencies who oversees those things is not interested or doesn't care. And the reason they say that, according to what John said, is that most people would see that as a personal endorsement by that individual. Because it doesn't say the city council of the city of Blaine, it says the mayor or council person. So the interpretation is that's that person.
The only difference is, though, is when most people's perception is the mayor is elected by the community. And our mayor is not.
It's a little bit different.
That reflect, mm-hmm. He didn't reflect what I felt.
But he's still on his own.
But that's
I guess the question would be that is the council, for all kinds of reasons, do you want to set some kind of a working, you already have council rules about how you follow certain procedures. If that's something that you'd want to include, I think that would be a discussion amongst the council. It's just like, I think the rule that the council will waive or excuse members from council meetings. And it's a rule, I think, that you can discuss amongst yourselves and have some agreement about. Right now, I don't think it's defined. I think it's open to the mayor's interpretation of what his capacities are. Mm-hmm. Council members also are assigned to committees where they go to these meetings and make decisions on behalf of the council without being briefed or briefing the council. Pro-Mayor Pro Tem, he goes to WTA. They're making decisions and recommendations, and he's approving things as a course of his time there, and he's been kind of given that authority, I think, by the delegation to do that. Other members serve on other committees. We're going to go to the Farm Gang Committee down in Everett, I think, later in December as part of this regional transportation. Typically, we would go down there. We don't debate the agenda before we go. But then we could do that if that's what the council's prerogatives are. I just haven't seen that as part of
the
program.
But the meetings really aren't closed, per se.
Oh, they are.
So if someone wanted to come in, if Dennis or I wanted to come in, we couldn't sit along the chairs, along the, as a visitor? We couldn't do that?
Maybe. I've seen people ask me.
Okay.
Then I know I get on there.
Yeah. No, I think the answer is most generally anybody's welcome to be there, but it's not a rule.
Okay.
I've been in the meetings where people have come in and they've been asked to leave.
Okay.
I just needed some clarification, and I think there needs to be some guidelines.
So I guess the councilors, if there's enough people on the council that's nodding yes or no, or maybe you could call me later, we could. I think it's always a good idea every year to come back and revisit council your policies internally, and we could include that as part of the discussion if you'd like. I don't know what your thoughts are about that.
Well, the part that got me last was on November 8th, which was Sunday. The Bellingham paper came out and went through the list of proposals that were supported by various groups in terms of being conservative or being liberal. And I'll leave it.
So you guys can give me a call. What your thoughts are.
Well, in most, we're the only city in the county that has a non-elected mayor.
Right.
And
in many cases, I would be thrilled to say I can't.
Exactly. But in those cases, the mayor is actually the CEO of the city. In our case, you're the CEO of the
right.
city.
Mm-hmm.
So. You and Harry do this together.
No way. That's fine. As I say, I'd be thrilled on many occasions to say, no, I can't because the rules don't allow me to.
With that in mind, perhaps we should discuss it.
I'm sorry, what?
Perhaps we should have a more formal discussion somewhere down the road, because I admit that occasionally I've had a twist of, is this what we should be doing or not?
Yeah, sometimes you have a devil on that shoulder, and sometimes you have an angel on that one, and we'll talk to you. So how about we put it on the agenda as in December as just a work study or work session on council mm-hmm. rules.
Sure.
Go back and just revisit them and see if they still make mm-hmm. sense for today. Sometimes in past places, the list of committees are reviewed every year, too. You guys do that a little bit here, but people could change committees if they were interested in something different as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you like, we can bring that back in December or January, whatever
sure.
the preference is.
Let's do that. Yep. That would be perfect. Okay.
Right. Very good. Well, happy to do that.
Okay. Whatcom Council of Governments, there's a meeting this week. And North Whatcom Fire update. Chief Hollander.
Evening, Council. It's been really quiet at the fire department. We want to keep it that way. So I'll whisper that, knock on wood. I did share with you our monthly newsletter, which has got an interesting story on Dale Rutgers. If you know Dale, he's been volunteering for the fire district now for 40 years.
Oh, my.
And he's still active. He retired and then came back. So kind of an interesting story there.
Oh, my gosh.
Other than that, I don't have much else to share with you unless you have any questions.
Another chief in the audience, Chief Haslip, do you have anything that you would like to?
No report.
No report. Thank you very, very much. Okay, that brings us to the next item on the agenda, department reports. First item is public works, and we were looking for project updates.
Projects at Public Works were not slowing down anytime too soon, although we can report some significant progress in Vista Terrace. They paved about two-thirds of the road. They ended at the cul-de-sac at Terrace, and they'll be finishing the paving tomorrow morning. So we got a nice break in the weather, and while the subcontractor's working on the paving, Lincoln Lane, which is the gravel portion of the project, is under construction. So everything is looking good in terms of schedule. And from my conversation with the assistant director, we are looking as also within the budget of the bid proposal at this time. So Public Works Building, I kind of reported already, and certainly come out and see us. It's definitely starting to take some shape. The monitoring well project, we received a draft report from our consultant. I am not at the in the position yet to really discuss it more than I've already described, just because I haven't had a chance to really get through it myself yet. The pipeline project, which is essentially just pulling the wire and getting the transformers in and essentially getting the folks on pipeline road connected to the underground power that the conduit we installed a couple years ago. That project is getting started next week. So you actually awarded that quite a while ago, and the transformers took a long time for the contractor to get, and they're coming from a ways away. It didn't make sense to come, do some work, and then go away. So we kind of gave them a nod to start late. And the GPS mapping project will also start next week, so we definitely have our hands full at Public Works. One other item, it is that time of year again where we have our annual meeting with the Birch Bay Water and Sewer District, and so I just wanted to look to, we'd like to have a couple of council members come if possible, kind of report on the different things that we're working on throughout the year. We talk about our true up and how we come up with next year's wholesale rate, and I'm anticipating a fairly detailed conversation on this monitoring well and its implications to kind of be a kind of sounding board before we bring it to the full council.
And when is that?
So it needs to be in December. We have not scheduled it yet. Usually Charlie comes, and so we make it after 9, I think is what worked with Charlie. I don't want to presume that you want to keep doing this every year. Yes? Okay. Anybody else?
Can you just shoot an email when you nail down the date?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
depends on what day of the week it is.
Of the week. We're wide open, so if there's days of the week that work better for you.
Tuesdays and Thursdays
really
are good for me.
It doesn't really matter to me.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll shoot something out and shoot if there's more of you that are interested. We always put a notice in the paper. It's not a problem.
Okay.
We'd love to have it.
Okay. Thank you, Raven. City manager.
Just have a couple items to report. It looks like November 23rd, 4 o'clock, is going to be the grand opening of the pavilion project. So we're starting to dial that in. So it's going to be before the regular meeting scheduled at 4 o'clock. 5 o'clock will be a study session, I'm sure, of some sort. So 4 o'clock, we're working toward that goal now. And just some of the items I've been working on this past couple of weeks, labor negotiations, I mentioned earlier strategic planning and budgeting. We had a chance to attend the Ferndale Expo representing the city. Debbie Harger was there as well as the chamber, and I think it was a good turnout. I had a chance to participate in Amtrak study. Did you want to talk about that at all tonight?
Well, can we just give a summary of just kind of what was talked about?
Yeah, that'd be good to do that. I did have a chance to meet with Ken Hertz last week. He's still very interested in the project on the Hill, and we talked a bit about that potential project through Lincoln Park, and he's continuing to work with his resources. He's still very interested in how we see that project. And then we're looking forward to getting through the budget process. Any questions or comments or corrections?
So the station stop policy committee that we were in, the conference call with the rest of the group of 50 or so down in Vancouver, Washington, was kind of an introduction to the interim station stop policy they have in place from the fact that Auburn, Washington, has been asking for a stop. They actually already have a station for the local train traffic. I don't know what they call that.
Light rail,
I guess. And so, but there would have to be some improvements made to the station and tracks, I believe, to have the Amtrak Cascade stop there. And so they didn't approve that outright, but they established this policy of the criteria they should consider. So they went through that, you know, the major points of it, and we gave our input as to how important we think that the Lower Mainland people be involved, and we did have a member of the White Rock City Council here in chambers for that meeting, as well as one of City of Surrey's traffic engineers was here. And so they got to listen in. They didn't really contribute anything, but we made a few comments, especially in regards to including Canada in the advisory process, because they very much would like a station in Blaine, because it's just not possible to have one in the Lower Mainland, in White Rock, that they had considered years ago, or anywhere else along the way. And they've also discussed moving the tracks a little bit inland. And so, anyway, that was our big thing, to get some participation from the Lower Mainland. And so it was good. There's two more meetings scheduled in the next few months, and I'd like to get to at least one of them down in Vancouver, Washington. And we'll just keep plugging away and making sure they don't forget about us up here. That would be a very good thing for us.
Yeah, and they know why we're there.
And yeah, Harry was actually there at the meeting.
Boy, they're there.
But the rest of us were up here by phone. And I had a question for you. I understand the mailbox relocations have been put in your lap to deal with. Is that correct? Raven was dealing with it for a while. And then I think you were supposed to get involved. So where does that stand?
Because our box is
on C Street. It's a sticky note on my desk.
They are not moved yet on C Street.
Yeah. What we have done, Bill Bullock, it's actually been the one that's been the most persistent in trying to get this through. At his level of frustration, he wrote a letter, which I have edited, and then I need to get it to Mr. Wilbrecht to actually sign, because Bill has sent probably,
I think it's
half
time.
A dozen emails.
Dave.
So the next step needs to come from Dave, and
it's getting to the ridiculous now. Yeah. It's probably been more than a year now that they moved those boxes without conferring with the city of Blaine. They are too close to the roads. It's a hindrance to handicapped people getting their mail, and they've got to either put in different kinds of boxes to enable that to happen from the sidewalk side, or move them back to where they were before. And that's probably would be the cheaper way to go, I would think, for them. But we can't let up on this.
No.
So we'll get together. My suggestion is that we'll drop the letter and we'll hand deliver it.
Okay. Yeah.
We need to really put the pressure on.
We've consulted with Mr. Sitkin and to see what alternatives we have through a legal process. I mean, there are alternatives, but because this is a federal agency and those boxes are federal property, it's a little bit different than your typical.
For their own purposes, there's no need for them to move them. They have no incentive to move them unless we put pressure on them.
They put them where they want to go.
So it was not right. They did not confer with us.
We'll follow up. We'll
yeah, please.
So, yeah, we haven't lost track of that.
So
thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
Well, you record that in the minutes. And now it,
sorry yeah. about that, Dave, but I think it's time.
It's always
been
in my
court.
Okay. Michael, do you have anything else that you wish to add?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. Okay, that brings us to calendars. Everything else, I think, is closed on the November 11th.
Don't forget about the ceremony at the cannon at 11 o'clock in the morning, rain or shine.
That's on Wednesday.
There's
right?
a lot of citizens that show up for that, and it's a very meaningful ceremony.
Okay. Any unfinished business? Any council new business?
I have a question, Harry. If you go around Blaine, there's a lot of little rolled-up newspapers in driveways laying on the ground. And somebody, the Herald, paid somebody to go around and throw these flyers out. And there's still tons of them laying out in people's driveways. They didn't throw them in the yards. Didn't put them on the porches. They just threw them out in the driveway of houses and expected. And they're just advertisements for the Bellingham Herald. It's like a paid litter problem for the Herald. I don't know if anything. Well, you know what? I don't know. They get ticked off about it. For one thing, why are they throwing stuff in the yard?
Yeah, I agree.
You know, how they get away with doing this?
I think
that was a question.
Problem in Seattle after that.
Yeah, but the Herald, you know where it's coming from. It's because of the Herald. The Bellingham Herald is doing it. So
that might be an easier one than the post office.
Yeah. You go to Susan Del Bene. Go to Susan Del Bene. You really would do.
Unfinished business. Did we write a letter to the council on the firearms shooting at ducks?
To the county council, I did.
County council, we were going to write.
I heard them the other morning.
Yeah, we were going to write them and ask them if they could consider changing their ordinance to include.
Yeah, thank you for reminding me.
Yeah. 100 miles out.
I thought season was over. They still do it now.
They're just starting. They were out there the other morning.
By the way, how many chickens are we allowed to have in the city?
Sorry, chickens? I believe it's six hens.
Okay. I saw 8 or 10 of them in a yard, and I thought I think they're over their limit. But they're pretty quiet. So, and they have one little quacking duck.
Should depend on the size.
They have a nice big pen, really big pen.
By the pound, Harry.
By the pound. Okay, hearing no council new business, we'll go to executive session. And this is to discuss the collective bargaining pursuant to RCW 42 period 30 period 140 forum brackets and the sale of real estate pursuant to RCW 42 period 30 period 110 1 in brackets C in brackets. And how long do we anticipate being out?
An hour.
And no action planned. Okay, we're leaving at exactly 7:18 and should be back approximately 8:18.